windy today.
Oh, it's Thursday.
So am I. Let's go have a drink. Welcome to Brookings Cafe. There's just no telling who might be here today as we venture in to quench our thirst. We call it our Great American Debate. We come to the discussion in the spirit of fairness and an attempt to offer something conclusive. We don't claim to be experts, but we will strive to come to the table prepared to discuss our topic. We are going to extend invitations to those we think may offer an opposing point of view, and in some cases we may extend a challenge to specific people or groups to defend their point of view. Beware, we fact-check anything that sounds questionable, and we look dimly on mere opinions that aren't based in knowledge. We are trying to reach some sort of a resolution, something that both sides can settle on as an idea worth promoting. On January 14th, a women's discussion started on the discussion at Brookings Cafe. The gist of the discussion was that women are tired of men being bullies. They want to be treated as equals and respected as fellow human beings. Now men have come to the table to speak to the issue. How badly will they put their feet in their mouths, or will they surprise you with what they think? This is a very difficult discussion. It's based on an article in the New York Times that was sent by one of the women in the women's discussion. I'll give you the link in a minute, so if you want to go get your pencil, if you're interested in the link that we're referring to. The headline of it is, "We asked 615 men about how they conduct themselves at work." And it goes on to say, the victims of sexual harassment who have recently come forward are far from being alone. Nearly half of women say they have experienced some form of it at work at least once in their careers, but there has been little research about those responsible. In a new survey, about a third of men say they had done something at work within the past year that would qualify as objectionable behavior or sexual harassment. The New York Times asking, in the last year at work, have you told sexual stories or jokes that might consider offensive, made remarks that some might consider sexist or offensive, displayed, used, or distributed materials like videos or cartoons that some might consider sexist or suggestive, made attempts to draw someone into a discussion of sexual matters even though the person did not want to join in, made gestures or used body language of a sexual nature which embarrassed or offended someone, continued to ask someone for dates, drinks, or dinner even though he or she said no, made attempts to establish a romantic sexual relationship with someone despite that person's efforts to discourage it, touched someone in a way that made him or her feel uncomfortable, made uninvited attempts to stroke, fondle, or kiss someone, offered or implied rewards if someone engaged in sexual behavior, or treated someone badly if he or she didn't. And then the survey results basically said that 19% told jokes or stories, 16% made sexist remarks, 7% presented sexual materials, 1% unwanted sex talk, 4% gestures, 4% asked for dates after they got a no answer, 3% asking for a relationship after a no answer, 2% were guilty of touching, unwanted touch, 1% stroking, 2% for sexual coercion. Okay, pencil ready? Here we go. It's https://www.newyorktimes.com/interactive/2017/12/28/upshot/sexual-harassment-survey-600-men.html. That's the link, and we will post that on the website, kciw.org. The survey says that a third of men fall guilty for one of those things. And while that is true, as I was looking through it, it appeared to me that only 25% of men are really in what I would consider to be the misguided category, and a much smaller percentage fall into the really abusive category. First of all, I think men are getting a bad rap. I think the dialogue is often referring to abuse as a men's issue, when it's really an abuse issue, and that it's often all too easy to point the finger at men in general. Power. That's an interesting word. Do you have it? Or are you just following along trying to find your way through this maze we call life? It takes power to succeed in life, right? And we all strive to have power. There are many issues here and many questions. Is it valid to say that times have changed, or is the bottom line here power? Who has it? Who doesn't? And why? And why is it so amazingly hard to get it? We can only try to get along with those with a different viewpoint. If the basic argument is about power, is it fair to keep an entire entity in submission? An entire race, an entire class, an entire group like women, transsexuals, much less entire cultures like Native Americans, blacks, or Latinos? If the question is about entities vying for power, what happens when artificial intelligence comes to your neighborhood and has another point of view? Do you concede power? Or do you hope to win against a superior intelligence, a system that rules your life, a system called culture? The male culture is ultimately in competition with the female culture, but why? And to serve what end? What are the rules? Alan Watts once said, "Life is a game in which the rules are constantly changing, and were never made clear in the first place." When the Reverend Dr. Charles Harlow was in town recently, he pointed out that we all start in life knowing nothing about the culture we are born into. We learn what our parents teach us, and those lessons stay with us for the rest of our lives. I believe it is probably pointless to point to the past as anything else but a lesson. We are all guilty of taking that big ego risk, of taking the initiative to put our arm around our date, or to initiate holding her hand. That's what my mother told me. She said, "Your girlfriend wants you to take the initiative." Granted, that's a long way from grabbing a bottom and blaming it on David Copperfield, and a really long way from conduct exhibited by men like Harvey Weinstein. Women now take the initiative in a lot of cases, and it could be argued that the rule is still she pursues him until he catches her. I'm suggesting that life is pretty confusing, and that for a young lad growing up in an abusive culture, it's a lot of misdirection. Before I retired, I worked with juvenile delinquents, and we talked about thinking errors. The young burglar would blame his victim for leaving the door unlocked or the window open. It certainly wasn't his fault that he stole the TV. Thinking errors is what was holding him back in life, and thinking errors is what is behind the rapist who says it's her fault, her skirt was too short, or the cut of her dress was too low. And finally, how many women fall into an equally abusive way of life that men fall victim to? The bottom line is that culture is to blame for where we are. Thousands of years of letting the big bruiser be king, electing bullies rather than the good guy. A war culture of conquering a less powerful group. That's human history. And that history has to end because it's become nuclear bomb in size. Carl Sagan once said, "Picture a room awash in gasoline and men arguing who has the biggest pile of matches." So hopefully now we are on another path, and we as men are having to relearn a culture. I think the best we can say is that yes, we will put our foot in our mouths, and we will continue to be clumsy oafs that just don't get it. But for most of us, we are trying, and we are truly supportive of the goals for the women's movement. We ask for women to be patient with us and to understand most of us will stand with you. Forgive us if we are still clueless and still clumsy in our efforts. I'm Dan.
I'm Ray.
I'm Rick.
And here we are to discuss this a bit about what are gender relationships, especially in relation to what it is that women want for the future.
One of the things that I remember reading is a tome about way back when early civilizations, goddesses were predominant. The claim of the author is that since language got developed, writable language that was transferable and given to other people got popular, all of a sudden the influences of the goddesses disappeared and men started taking over, and this led to a rather tragic close to the holistic understanding and genteelness of civilization at large. Now, I'm not quite sure if this is true or not, but that's supposed to be the way that the male started becoming predominant.
And this was what period of time?
This was back in the 12th and 13th centuries, 11th century.
I take it even further back than that. I mean, the animal world functions basically by power. That's the way that the animal world works. And we came from that particular environment, and you can see it in the behavior of chimpanzees, for example, who they vie for power. Whoever is the biggest and the baddest basically winds up king of the tribe, so to speak.
One of the main differences, though, between us and animals, there's two main differences, and one is we can practice restraint, and the other is we're not afraid of the vacuum cleaner.
You say practice restraint.
Yeah, I mean, the bodies of all sexual animals are designed to attract each other, and a woman's body is designed to attract men. But if you've had any kind of breeding or intelligence or anything at all, you practice restraint. You just don't go rip clothes off or act inappropriately.
Well, one of the major differences is that animals go through rutting periods.
Right.
And human beings have a monthly cycle, which is enormously larger and more complicated.
But it really has nothing to do with sex, though.
Well, I think it most certainly does.
It has to do with breeding, but not to do with sexual attraction or...
Pheromones, my friend, cause sexual attraction to be very strong.
Okay.
Also consider that for, I think, most men, they see something from a distance and pheromones has nothing to do with it. They say that's attractive to me for one reason or another. They're biologically programmed to pursue something that they're attracted to. As Ray was just saying, there's this built-in attraction between people. But the restraint aspect of it is the thing that to me, if you look at human history over the years, we have basically tried to beat the sexual urges, if you will, into submission, and the whole business of religiousness tends to center a lot on your behavior when you're naked and that kind of thing. And I remember growing up as a Catholic, and here was the catechism, and I was also pushing puberty at that time. And I got the lectures. I got the lectures as to, you know, if you're thinking bad thoughts, you need to go take a cold shower or do this or do that. And the culture also has, it has gone through major transformations, just mostly in the last few years, I think. It seems like society has been fairly consistently a white, aggressive society. It's Europeans who came over, essentially captured the land from Native Americans. They used power to essentially push Native Americans almost completely off the continent and to establish the cities and the cultures that we have now. There's a lot going on, I see, with the religiousness, if you will, that has said, no, you have to restrain yourself, you have to practice the restraint, and the culture itself, what's at the root of the culture, which is to succeed, to go forth and conquer new lands and what have you.
And there are also exceptions. Shakers, marvelous sect, believed in celibacy.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they had some marvelous inventions like table saw, mm-hmm. They invented a round barn so that no stall was more than 20 paces away, and you could have 100 stalls. They're no longer here with us. It's because they abstained. Now, this is kind of an exception, but there are various anomalies in sexual preferences and behaviors and mores, and this is just one of the ones that showed up, which seem to inhibit something which would have been very successful as far as probabilities to develop useful things and ideas and inventions. It's a peculiar thing.
It's also a very complex thing.
Yes.
the whole society itself. And in America, it's even worse because it's a melting pot. So here's a culture from the Middle East, for example, has a different way of looking at it. Here's another culture up in Alaska, right? You might be familiar with some of that.
Every culture has its own way of men dealing with women and vice versa, and as would occupations. I worked as a police officer, and I think the interactions between the men and women in my office was more polite because the women wore guns. But even the ones that didn't have guns, it was a blood and guts business, and we were all part of the same family, so to speak. And the way we would interact with women, be it the clerk typist or the other cops, would be probably much different than maybe in a bank. Somebody from a bank might walk in and be very shocked at the language used and things. But it never.
Well, and you also have the sports culture.
Sports culture?
Yeah, the sports culture is quite a bit different from the bridge club culture.
Right.
Sports culture is typically, it's a male-driven world. It's full of this whole idea of rah, 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 let's go tromp the other team for this, win one for the Gipper, whatever. So you worked in the cop shop. There, it's a different culture than it is in the sports culture. It's a different culture from where it might be in a more, like you say, a bank.
Yeah.
Someplace that's more polite.
We were polite. I will not accept that dig.
But yeah.
It was, you know, the guys who were out on the road or the women who were out on the road were, like I said, it's blood and guts. And it was a relatively small detachment I was in. And if somebody was responding to an accident where three people were killed, whole office knew that was going on. The dispatchers were responsible for making sure that ambulances got sent out and different things got done. So we were all kind of in the same ballpark. When I first arrived at my office in Fairbanks, I was shocked the way men and women talked. I was brought up in a culture where you didn't say any kind of bad words in front of a woman at all. When I got to Fairbanks in the mid-70s, where things were changing anyway, I was pretty surprised at how things were. But as far as I only knew of one person that I can think of who would make inappropriate comments, and he was just a jerk. He wasn't stupid, but he was a jerk. And other people would tell dirty jokes or things like that, but nobody was offended by them. I keep saying bank because you assume bank have a more polite culture. The jokes that were told may offend somebody working in a bank,
as opposed to the jokes told in the locker room, would be
yes.
much more common. And that's another thing too, is that I think that, you know, they talk about men and locker room talk, and that's a different conversation from men who are in mixed company. And unfortunately, I think a lot of this bully culture comes from men in the locker room, in a conversation. And so that's another one of those cultural mechanisms that continues to perpetuate this idea that men are superior to women and that women don't have any rights in the matter, so to speak, or for why men feel like somehow they can exert their power over someone else. And oftentimes, not necessarily just women, but, you know, other men as well. I mean, once you get into that bully culture, it's kind of like sex has nothing to do with it.
Sex crimes are power crimes and not sex crimes.
Mm-hmm.
This is why you see women who you don't think anybody would rape being raped or things of that nature. I was a sexual assault and abuse investigator. That's sex crimes fed my family for several years, so.
There's also some possibility that this locker room talk might, in fact, be competition.
Oh, of course it is.
Oh, yes, it is, yes.
That's the funny thing when Trump was saying it was locker room talk, it was just locker room talk. Well, I heard a lot of locker room talk, but I never heard anybody brag about not accomplishing their goal like he did with whatever that actress was or whatever.
Yeah, maybe that was the first of some sort. Yeah, you're right. When I stop and think about it, it's men's locker room talk is always about, yeah, I was a success.
You know, well, actually, in my job, the locker room talk was somebody would get out a new gun they bought or some stupid thing like that. But I wanted to change it to women, but they kept it on guns.
Yeah, okay. And I think that it also is something that is age-specific. I think you get a lot more locker room talk, if you will, with men who are, let's say, 18, 16. Let's just go ahead and drop it back or take it all the way back to puberty or whatever. And, you know, and then there comes a point in your life, and probably 45, I think, is probably the time in life when men tend to kind of slow down a little bit, and they don't have the same priorities, and maybe they decide they'd rather have a sports car than to necessarily boast how many conquests that they have made. You know, so I see it as being younger men filled with testosterone.
Yes.
What else?
There's also a curiosity that that can be exhibited when you examine matriarchal societies like Spain.
Okay.
Women don't go anywhere without someone guarding them. Now, the same thing is also true in most Arabic cultures. You can't go out without a husband or brother or some male accompanying you. And one really wonders, do the same things have effect for the disregard of females, you know, just taking liberties with them in a matriarchal culture as we have? I don't think so. It's very strongly prohibited by just a donna being with, you know, the young woman who's supposed to be kept marriageable.
Mm-hmm. You were talking about different cultures, and power came to my mind. I was speaking with, he's long gone, his brother-in-law now, but nonetheless, an ex-brother-in-law, and he lived in Saudi Arabia with my sister, and they were computer people who were essentially working with computer systems in Saudi Arabia with various governments in that area. And I remember the comment that he made was that if you really want to know what's going on, it's women that have the power, because they are the ones who control the wealth. And so the men go out and beat their chests and compare the size of their knives in this case, but that ultimately speaking, it's the women who are controlling the society, because they do hold all the wealth.
Curiously enough, that's almost equivalent here. Women tend to survive husbands and inherit are substantially more wealthy than males.
That's changing, I think, though. I think the courts are more and more seeing it as kind of an even split, so to speak. They recognize that both parties have contributed. The last divorce that I went through, well, I just simply told her, I said, you know, as far as I'm concerned, it was your money. You inherited it from your family. And so I'm not out trying to seek your wealth. The judge in Oklahoma, where I got the divorce, he would have simply have said, well, let's just split everything right down the middle, and I don't feel that would have been fair.
That's California style also.
Is it?
Yes. Mutual property stuff.
Yeah, and I think more and more that is the case. What about vive la différence? We've heard that expression before. Men and women are different. Vive la différence. And it's getting blurred a little bit now as you have other categories of sexuality in there. That goes back to this initial idea of attraction. You're attracted to a particular set of this, and in most cases, it's because what you're attracted to is exactly opposite what you are. Whether it be male-female differences, which, you know, to me that's the most common, but there are also a lot of other differences. I've known of relationships that where men and women were just different political parties, different whatever, but the relationship survived wonderfully because they love to argue.
Well, this is this is another interesting aspect. The intellectual prowess of women has not been given perhaps as much recognition as it deserves. For example, early astronauts, their courses were plotted by women.
Mm-hmm.
The astronauts relied on the women.
Mm-hmm.
Ada Lovelace, fantastically proficient and brilliant mathematician in the era of Charles Babbage, and several other women who have been remarkably astute astronomers, who've just now barely come into recognition for having discovered a whole lot of interesting objects. All of a sudden, these things are becoming known so that intellectual properties can be seen as pretty much equivalent between males and females. And I'm not sure that's a happy thing for guys.
I think it's even worse than that. I read an article several years ago, and I would have to do some extensive Google research to see if I could even get close to finding it. The gist of the article was that women are, in fact, superior to men in just about everything. They cited all kinds of professions. There were the medical mm-hmm. professions, very common. Women doctors excelled and were far better than men in the medical field. Women were better at business. Women were better at, and these were, you know, just all kinds of tests, and also tracking women and where they were in life. There were a couple of exceptions, and I think it was just because Danica Patrick wasn't around at the time. But race car driving, I think, was one of them. I think another was jet airplanes, because there just weren't very many female pilots that were in that profession at that time.
In my job, we had women would take one of two tacks. They either remain women, or they would try very hard to be tough guys, and they were usually the worst cops we had.
The tough guys?
Yeah, they were trying to prove they were men, or as tough as men, and were just abysmal at it. And then we had women who remained women who were excelled at many things. Mm-hmm. For whatever reason, I don't know what the reason was. One particular woman that was my partner for many years, still a friend of mine, she was just very, very good at calming situations down. When things got out of hand, she was very good at understanding people, and yeah, she was excellent at that type of thing.
And effective police work is...
She couldn't drive worth a damn, though. I always drove.
Oh, there are also women now who are Green Berets, successfully, mm-hmm. not all, SEALs, and also various other specific special forces, and apparently... Their success rate is not very high, but there are some women who have actually gone through the training and succeeded, which is another thing which makes a guy kind of wonder, well, where do I stand with this now? If she says no, do I have to believe it? You know, this kind of...
You better believe it.
Better believe it, yeah. She's armed. You know, I think, by and large, men are still larger, and so therefore they tend to be more suited for brute strength.
Mm-hmm.
From this article that I saw many years ago, it just kind of seems that you're talking about smarts, and women do exceed in that. And of course, there are all of these exceptions.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, there are the dumbest of us and the brightest of us, but the women seem to be coming out on top in that respect. So what do you think? Are men getting a bad rap? It seems to me that I hear about sexual harassment and Harvey Weinstein, whatever. You know, these guys are really kind of the exceptions in one sense. It's more common than I think we would like for it to be
mm-hmm.
in another sense. I feel, I mean, if 25% of the men are... A third, you know, I mean, telling dirty jokes. I'm not quite sure where I want to put the telling of dirty jokes. I mean, if you consistently do it and you're trying to get some woman's attention by telling her dirty jokes and hoping she'll say, oh, yeah, that's fun. Yeah, let's go hop in bed. That's one thing. But, I mean, just, you know, guys sitting around a workplace and telling jokes and a woman happens to be in the presence. I don't quite see that as being as abusive as like what Harvey Weinstein was doing.
Absolutely not.
It seems to me that it's really a smaller percentage of men. It seems to me a lot of the dialogue and a lot of the discussion tends to just be generically men. And it's kind of like, you know, calling people Muslims, I guess, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a category. It's a label that's been put on us. You know, it's kind of like you say, hi, I'm so-and-so and I'm a guy.
Well, when it really comes down to it, you have to look at individuals.
Mm-hmm.
Really individuals, because you can generalize something mathematically. If you take a whole bunch of values and you average them, almost none of them are the value which is average. They range all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing with people. Same thing with people. You just can't generalize and say that, you know, the whole thing is this or the whole thing is that. You really have to take a look at individual cases. And I kind of think Harvey Weinstein is deserved to get looked at very strongly, for example. But a lot of people...
I don't think you have to look very strongly at him. I think he's pretty blatant.
Who's the fellow Prairie Home Companion?
Now that one's a very curious one to me. I think that was a publicity stunt that he organized.
Perhaps, nonetheless, nonetheless, the mistakenly touching without intention mm-hmm. on someone's bare back is hardly the same thing as grabbing someone's butt or whatever mm-hmm. Trump professes he'd like to do.
Mm-hmm.
Much different indeed. And I think that the severity of actions really has to be attributed to each individual. And you just can't generalize and say, you know, the whole thing is gone. Just can't do that.
Yeah. Because when I look at what he was charged with by one individual, they remained friends after that for years, as I understand it. And she was essentially just reporting. And his reaction to it was, well, hey, this is a rather interesting story. He wasn't really offended by it, I don't think. That's why I jokingly say I think it was a publicity stunt on his part to yield a little press his way.
Might well be.
Although I haven't seen the outcome of that particular situation, but, you know, that's not a history of all kinds of abuses on his part. That's just simply, as best we can tell, it was an accident. You know, you reach over to pat somebody on the back, and so their shirt's hanging there open, and you accidentally wind up behind the shirt instead of on the outside of it. Yeah, I think he got an unfair rap in that. Not so sure about the politician that just comedian from SNL.
Franken.
Yeah. Not so sure about that one. He was a comedian and he was a jokester, and I've talked with a lot of people who say, not so sure about that. I mean, you know, it isn't that he's guilty of all that much. Granted, it's a little too much if you're just grabbing somebody and trying to plant a big sloppy kiss on them.
That's true.
It was somebody who said that it's okay to say no, that if your Aunt Martha comes over and you're a 7-year-old and Aunt Martha comes over and just slobbers all over you because she just loves sloppy kisses, it's okay to say, no, that's not acceptable behavior. You know, that's not necessarily sexual, but it's not assault either, I don't think. But it could be viewed as being past the norm. I was interested when I read in the news here just recently that there is this couple, and I think they get along just fine. They labeled them as being a religious sect. They had 13 children, and one of the girls escaped.
They were strapped to the beds?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
I mean,
a disaster.
That's out and out abuse. Just
absolutely.
Out and out abuse. And I don't know if there was any sexual abuse involved in any of that. The significance of all of this that I see is that you have a percentage of human beings who are just, I'm sorry, beyond the edge. Their behavior is, I mean, working with juvenile delinquents, that's one of the things that I came to realize. There's a percentage of people that their behavior is just so far out there. And there's more than just this one couple with the 13 children. Of all of the kids that were in this institution, and there were a couple hundred kids in there, actually, I think at one time, I think the population was pushing 300. But of all of these kids, they all came from very abusive type of environments.
Mm-hmm. Brings in my field of expertise a little bit. I cringe when I go in the grocery store and some little girl comes up to me and says hello, or I see a little kid with their name on their shirt or something like that. People need to pay more attention to their children. They need to go back to teaching children not to talk to strangers. I think it's absolutely wonderful that kids are raised differently than they were in my generation, to where they are actually permitted to participate in the conversation. You know, when my parents used to say children are to be seen and not heard, and now we have kids that are open and forthcoming, but there are guys out there, people out there, not necessarily guys, who are just looking for that type of thing. They look for two types of kids, if they're picking up kids on the street, and one would be kids that are open and friendly like that, who you can easily groom and become attached to. Also having the name on, you know, Sally, you have to come with me right now. Your mother is, or something, or your dog is missing, or something like that. That's a terrible thing to do.
Well, you worked in this field, and you told me a story where you were sitting outside parks, and your job
right
was to try to spot the predators.
We'd had a guy who was who had abused a little boy in a store, and so as part of the investigation, I was staking out places, hanging out by the schools and things like that, and I spent an hour or two sitting in on bleachers overlooking a playground, hoping maybe somebody would appear that looked suspicious, and I realized after a little while that all the mothers were watching me,
mm-hmm.
which is very good.
It was a good
and
thing.
I didn't look like this then. I had a haircut and was dressed clean and nice, but
nonetheless, you're, as far as their perception is concerned, you're in the wrong place at the wrong time.
The other kid that pedophiles will be looking for is some kid that looks lonely or needy. I used to do talks to school children, and boy, you could pick out the ones who were being abused in a twinkle. They would act differently, or the ones that could easily be picked up on. There'd always be the kid that would raise his hand and be yelling out and trying to get attention and things like that. So,
or very shy,
yeah, or just within themselves. We did a talk once, my partner and I, in the school in the town that I used to live in. It's a small...
What was the population of the town?
About 500 people. They would graduate about 12 kids to be the graduating class. And the subject was on... We weren't talking specifically about sexual abuse, but just about being safe or something like that. And all we got was response and questions were from the boys. And when the class was over, we mentioned that to the teacher, and they said, That's the way they're brought up. You're not going to get much mm-hmm. response from the girls. So.
Okay, let's see if we can turn to this struggle of women trying to gain equal footing. It's a situation where men have control. I don't know. Are they planning to relinquish control, or is it going to be a continued struggle? I mean, what would you consider to be the climate in our country? Are men willing to march with the women? Are men willing to stand with them and say, yes, we believe that you should be an equal? Let me phrase it this way. If the Equal Rights Amendment was proposed today, would it pass?
Oh, much more likely than at the time it was brought up. You know, these are the type of things that culturally change. If there's a belief that men are more powerful than society at one time, people of different nationalities or religions or races were not considered as good, and now that's changed rapidly, and then it will continue to change slowly to pick it up to where everything is equal.
There are other aspects that get considered also. Economic, for example.
Mm-hmm.
There are some very, very powerful high-tech women executives, and they make a lot of money. Other women are in extremely useful positions, although their pay rate is disastrously low compared to males doing the same job. But there are other influences than for someone to walk up and say, we ought to be equal. That's fine to say, but without any back reason to hold it up and make it useful, it ain't going to happen. But there are reasons that are happening. And this business with women being intellectually very useful and profit-making is one of them.
I think that pay disparity may be to some extent dependent on the type of business. My wife was a computer programmer, and her sister was also in the computer business, and they were paid, both of them, at different times more than their male counterparts because they were paid on ability. And at least one of the jobs my wife had, they were not allowed to discuss how much money they made with the other employees because sometimes it'd be a big difference. My sister-in-law was a supervisor in her early 20s just because she had a great deal of ability in the computer field.
And this was with companies that we would consider to be somewhat progressive.
Yeah. She worked for banks, airlines. I'm not sure the exact companies. My sister-in-law worked for computer companies because she went out and set up computer setups in different companies. This was back in the early 70s when this was fairly new.
So we are making headway. The culture is in the process of change, but it's not there yet. Will it ever be there? I think that it would be really nice if first of all, we had the differences in pay. If that was equalized, I don't think that'll happen overnight because there are so many issues that surround in any business. If an employer just up and elects to decide to pay somebody more money, that affects his bottom line.
Absolutely.
And so there are those factors that figure into that. In the women's discussion, that was a large part of what was being said was that, the male counterparts are making twice what we're making. And if we do things to try to equalize things, we're viewed differently. One of the stories that I recall hearing was that this woman was pregnant. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, her boss treated her completely differently, called her the B word or whatever. This is part of that attitude, I think, that is where the issue centers, is that, and this is that power thing again, it's how dare you come in here and screw up my plans to do this and this and this. That's obviously not fair.
True. It's a very Darwinian kind of constraint.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just functionality of women, we wouldn't be here without them at all. They're responsible for the human race still being in existence.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy being all bent out of shape because some woman got pregnant and was getting time off and, whatever else was inconvenient for him. He should look at it how inconvenient it would have been if his mother never had him.
So. The more I look at it, the more I realize that it's so complicated. It's such a sticky mess that we're really working really hard to try to wade ourselves out of this particular position. I wish that it were possible to wave a magic wand, but we all know that doesn't work. So is the answer just simply voting in the right people? Is the answer more complicated than that? Is minimum wage part of the answer?
I think the answer is very complicated, and it's not just, for example, women doing things. The entire culture has to have some kind of resolution so that the relationships, the way they're established now, which are not working, should be revised so that people come closer to, perhaps a peer relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of the interesting things is a very patriarchal family. A fellow has to watch over his wife, make sure she does everything, blah, blah, blah. She's restricted. So whatever intelligence and originality she can bring to the relationship is being subverted, and he's wasting his time making her subvert it. It's, mm-hmm. It just doesn't work that way. So it's a whole cultural thing. It's every single part has to change. If you have a system and something is messed up, the whole system is messed up, and you have to redo the whole system to get everything to work again.
Mm-hmm. I wonder how much further we have to go.
That is an excellent question.
And will humanity survive that long for it to all finally equal out? I suppose that if we can get it to be more equal in within business, somebody was talking about the military. One of the women was saying that if you're in the military, that's more of an equal opportunity employer, so to speak, that you're more likely to be judged for what you can do, be given rank for what you can do. And I know that that's one of the things that in speaking with somebody once who's pointed out that the military really was one of the first places where minorities were given opportunity, not necessarily credit, because now we're giving credit to these pilots, these black aviators in combat, and they weren't recognized at the time, but nonetheless.
Tuskegee Squadron, yeah.
Yeah, they were given the opportunity to get in the pilot seat and not just be somebody serving on the ground, et cetera. If they demonstrated the ability, then they were given that position. How much of the country is the military? I've heard some astounding figures, like 40% of America is basically the military. So,
wow.
I can't imagine rooting for the military just for that particular reason, but that's one thing to applaud, is that at least that system kind of works in a sense.
Wait, are you saying 40% are in the military, or 40% are in some way involved in the defense industry?
40% of the population in general is employed
in some way
by the military.
Yeah.
Which seems to me to be an outrageous percentage, and I should click on this and fact check that to see just.
Well, if you're including people that make parts for jet fighters and things like that, then I could easily go into 40%. Or in some way do something that's involved with the military.
Things that we don't necessarily think of as military, like Ford Motor Company.
Yeah.
They're involved with that because they're making parts and or vehicles and or something. All of these major contractors, defense contractors, they're involved with the military in one way or another. Although they don't necessarily reap the benefits of the military's idea of equality. What about the future? Where are we going? I tend to feel that we as a community have to have a voice. We the whole community has to work together basically to push this on down the road. So we're going to do a women's march. Actually, the women's march may have already taken place by the time this airs. But nonetheless, that's part of the effort. So maybe I could say the Women's March was part of the effort. We see all of these various and sundry things. I have this real sense of hope in that women across the whole United States are basically exerting their power, calling male dominance to the mat to fight this out.
I think you're saying that because of the people that we associate with, Dan.
No, I think, what was it, the Women's March in New York or Washington, D.C., was it, I think, was considered to be the largest.
Did you see the women that were interviewed after Trump was elected that voted for him and said things like, we weren't electing the parish priest, we were electing somebody to run the country and didn't care about his incredible amount of sexist stuff that he'd been doing for years and years and years. I mean, his appearances on the Howard Stern show all the time, bragging about going in the locker rooms. And you know, these are recorded things that he said himself. Then when they complained about it during the campaign, he said, oh, well, no, I didn't do that.
Did we not elect this guy because he is a bully? Is that not the way that we...
Part of the reason he got elected is because he got more publicity than anybody else, for the same reason that Sarah Palin got a lot of publicity. He was constantly saying outrageous things, so the news would lead with him, and the news companies were just thrilled that this guy was running because it was increasing their ratings. Nobody missed the 6 o'clock news because we had to see what Donald said.
And it also possibly there are people who voted for him for one aspect, disregarding all the bad stuff. So they got their one aspect, not thinking clearly about what it's going to be in the future and the results from this And I'm afraid that was one of the things that got him elected.
You're talking about single issue?
Single issue, yes. Yeah.
There's abortion, there's guns, environment, things like that, that people voted for him for.
That's the way I think. I don't want him president.
Exactly.
I don't care if he's going to, you know.
So that's venturing into politics, but of course, I think it would be fairly fair to say that the struggle between men and women is basically political. It's a struggle for power. That's what politics is. It's a struggle for power. So is everybody optimistic or anybody pessimistic? I think we've come a long way. And I think it's and it's not just the women's issue. We've come a long way with basic human rights. We've come a long way in that respect, but we're not there yet.
Right. There are other interesting dependencies, like what has been happening to the American family. It's tended to be feeble enough so that there's been some substantial disintegration and in a great many areas. And this is one of the things that does not help to get the culture back in on a useful basis where kids are learning good stuff from their parents. So this, mm-hmm. this is just one other aspect that needs to be considered also.
And economics. Economics plays a role in all of that. Because
absolutely.
One of the tragedies I think now is that you have so many single women who are struggling to earn a job, raise children. Not only that, they also are in this sexist battle to try to, I mean, the women who tolerate sexual harassment, for example, because their boss has the power to fire them and they need the job because they have two kids at home they have to feed and that kind of thing. I mean, that's part of that complicated mess that we're talking about, the whole sticky mess. How do you get them out of that? I am optimistic. I think that we will continue, and I hope so. And I look at it from the standpoint of that here are two basic bully personalities who are arguing over who has more buttons or the biggest button or whatever, and that just seems to be the typical antler mentality. And I kind of feel like that someday someone will push the button and, as the song goes, we'll all be blown away. And I, for one, see this as being a change from basically a male-dominated system to more of a matriarchal type of a system. Having women as leaders of the world, to me, is probably one of the most refreshing answers to what are we going to do in this nuclear age where we can completely obliterate ourselves from the planet if somebody goofs. The guy in Hawaii, he pushed the wrong button and sent the whole Hawaiian islands into panic. What happens if somebody pushes the button accidentally and launches the missile? I
think there's enough fail-safes to keep that
there?
From happening, yeah.
I'm glad you sleep at night.
Hopefully. Hopefully, yes.
Well, I've already lived longer than I ever expected to, so I sleep just fine.
Oh, that's an optimistic way of looking at life, I suppose. All right, anybody know any blonde jokes?
Two blondes walked into a building. You would have thought one of them had seen it.
Then there was the blonde who wanted to know why they allowed deer to cross, and they put deer crossing signs up in populated areas. Why don't they have them crossing out in the woods?
My favorite blonde joke is this. These two guys with the maintenance department are tasked with measuring the height of the flagpole out in front of City Hall. And so they go out there and they're staring at the height of this flagpole and their tape measure, and they try to make it go up that high and it just keeps folding over and they can't figure out how they're going to measure this flagpole. And then this car pulls up and a blonde gets out. And she walks up and she says, what are you doing? And they say, we're trying to measure the flagpole to see how high it is. And she says, well, I can help with that. So she goes out of her car and pops the trunk, takes out a wrench. They already have a tape measure, but she takes out a wrench and she takes the four bolts that hold the flagpole base or the flagpole itself to the base, and she lays the flagpole down. She takes their tape measure and she measures it out, and she says it's 18 feet. She hands them back the tape measure, stands the pole back up, and puts the nuts on it. Then she goes about her business and goes into City Hall, and the two guys stand there and look at each other, and one of them says, "You know, isn't that just like a blonde? We asked for the height, and she gave us the width." Is that a decent blonde joke?
Yes.
Yeah, out of curiosity, after all this business started happening about recriminations from women all over the place, about popular people, politicians, what have you, I remember back a half a century ago, I was working in Boston for Polaroid Corporation. There are a couple of very attractive women there, and I never realized it at the time, but they were getting rather specific remarks and requests and stuff like this, and they just tossed it off. It was good. And I don't think anybody was serious enough to pursue things that were really unwanted. But nonetheless, it struck me forcibly that this kind of stuff was happening a long time ago and has been happening for quite a while. And
Started with Harvey Weinstein, did you? Of course, it's been going on ever since there were men and women.
Yeah, I guess so.
And eventually society put together rules that you can do this and you can't do that. And now those rules are changing even more.
Well, that's the evolution of societies and the evolution of, I attribute to not just societies, but to me that was a large part of the function of religion years ago. I don't know that it worked any better then than it does now. And in absence of that, because we're a very diverse world now, in absence of that, there needs to be another rule book of some sort. And perhaps that's what we're waiting for, is for somebody to basically write a rule book. I think it's being written.
Hopefully that rule book won't have things like, if you violate the rules, you get stoned to death.
Yeah. Anybody know any more blonde jokes? Any last remarks before we go to the gallows?
Well, I think ultimately the big success is going to be with pretty much peer-type relationships rather than a hierarchical relationship between male and female. I think that's probably the way it's going to wind up.
I'm not sure. I think it's moving in that direction. Exactly what the mechanics are, I'm not sure, but I definitely applaud the Women's March. I applaud all of their efforts, and yes, I will stand with them and help them win everything I think they so dearly deserve.
Absolutely.
Well, I guess if I have closing comments, it will be to parents of little girls and little boys. Don't dress little girls up like they're women. They're not women. Don't give them makeup. Teach them how to be empowered. I can remember when my Aunt Kate used to come over, she'd always give me a big sloppy kiss that I absolutely hated, especially since she was usually half drunk. And today kids are taught, no, Aunt Kate, I don't like that, don't do that. Or the guy in the produce store pinching the little kid's face because she's so cute. Kids are being taught to be empowered now and should be. And please keep them close to you and don't have them talking to strangers.
I'm Dan.
I'm Ray.
I'm Rick.
And thank you. And you, the listener, please come join us at the table for any discussion.
The opinions expressed here are those of the individual participants. Curry Coast Community Radio takes no position on issues discussed in this program.